Welcome to the Lifting Lindsay podcast. I'm excited to chat with you guys today. I was sent a reel recently by a fitness influencer, really cute girl, but people had some definite questions about this one. They're like, wait. She's saying that all of my favorite fitness influencers can eat more food because of two reasons. One, they have reversed up after their diet, and that has pushed their maintenance numbers higher. So now they can just eat more food because they did that slow drip reverse kind of thing. The other thing was, and I actually think the main focus of that was kind of an afterthought, it seemed like, from her reel. The main thought was that if you put on muscle, then you can eat more. So let's break both of these down. I was actually surprised by how many people sent me this reel. Nobody's ever sent me a reel by this influencer before. And so I'm like, well, if enough people are sending, asking me, some even coaches were asking me about it. So I decided that, okay, well, let's just do a little deep dive into this. First, I think that it's really important to begin the conversation with this. We got to stop comparing. We got to stop comparing. What Sally down the street posts that she eats in a day does not have any bearing on you. It doesn't mean anything for you. Now, I'm actually not anti those what I eat in a day posts. I'm not anti them when it is an educated individual looking at them through the right lens. And that's what I'm trying to do here, is I'm trying to help, you know, let's get the right lens to view these things. Some people view them and they get really upset. Like, they really, like, really get upset about how dare somebody post what they're eating in a day. That doesn't mean anything for you. And I'm like, well, why aren't you getting as upset about them posting their exercise for the day? Like, I feel it's the same exact thing. Like, this is what I do. This is what it looks like. Now, did it get them to where they look today? Maybe, maybe not. Probably not. Once again, things are multifactorial. They're not just like this one thing. This one thing changed my life. And unless you're going to say Jesus after that, like it didn't. I'm sorry. Just kidding. Oh my gosh. You guys know I'm Christian though. But seriously, I see this all over Instagram. This one ab exercise snatched my waist in. No, it didn't. BS. It's called you lost body fat and you have nice genetics. And also you do work out and you do have muscle. It is multifactorial. There's a lot of things going on there. So it does kind of drive me nuts a little bit when people are saying this one thing built my delts. No, it didn't. There's a million things that contributed. And the fact that you think that just one thing gave you that is a really good like indicator that this individual doesn't know what they're talking about. Okay. That is, I get questions all the time. How do I know who to follow, who not to? Well, I can't make that call for you, but I can tell you one thing. If they say one thing, if they say, I got this by doing one thing, when I change this one thing, I'm going to call BS on that one, because it really is never one thing. It's not one thing to build your glutes. It's not one exercise. When I started doing this one exercise, my glutes blew up. No, even then, that's not true, because there's a lot of things that come into play. How is your recovery? Because no matter how hard you work in the gym, if your recovery is not on point, you're not building anything. How is your nutrition? A key part of recovery. And about and allowing your body to build. Then also, like, what was the intensity? What was the volume over the week that you were putting towards your glutes? It's not this one exercise that you did three sets of. That's not it. Because three sets, not even enough volume to actually get hypertrophy over the week. So, like I said, it's multifactorial. And going back to what I started with, when people will say, you know, this is just put on more muscle, then you can eat a lot more. Can you eat more at maintenance? Yes. How much though? That's the important question. How much? You know, I remember when I very first got into fitness and bodybuilding and hypertrophy and putting on muscle, and I got so, it was so fun. And I had my favorite influencers, and I didn't know much. I didn't know how to navigate all of this, but I had my favorite influencers. And you know, they would often say, like, one more pound of muscle, that's anywhere between 30 to 40. Some of them were saying to 50 more calories that you can then consume. And so, you know, do everything you can to get on that, to build that one more pound of muscle. It's not though, it's 1 pound of muscle is not 20. It's not 30. It's not 40. It's not 50. It's not even near that. We're talking about 1 pound is closer to you get to eat 10 more calories a day. Like, that's it. Now, I'm not poo-pooing on building muscle. You guys know me. You know there are so many benefits to building muscle that I've discussed numerous times before. We can utilize nutrition better. We can utilize carbs better. We are dealing with an obesity epidemic. And I truly, truly believe that most people, if they were to put on more muscle, they would be able to utilize carbs better. Insulin resistance wouldn't be so high, because when you put on more muscle, the body can use glucose, really drive it into those muscles when we build and are using them and we're active. But it is fascinating. So actually what science is saying about, if I put on 1 pound of muscle, which is actually pretty hard, and let's do a little review on this quickly. But if you put on 1 pound and you are relatively sedentary, so maybe you go to the gym 3 times a week, but other than that, you're kind of, you know, steps are around 4,000 or 5,000. I think 3,000 or 4,000 is what they can consider sedentary. You sit at work a lot, not up and moving, and then you go home and you sit and watch Netflix, or sit and, you know, go through Reels or TikTok or whatnot. That's a sedentary individual right there. And so they're going to be using more like 7 calories. So that 1 pound will give them about 7 calories. But somebody who uses the muscle that they put on more, they're more active, they're going to the gym, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 times a week, and doing training and lifting and walking or, you know, cardio, these individuals can actually, per pound, we're looking at anywhere from 9 to 12 more calories that they can eat because of that 1 pound of muscle. Now, we're just going to kind of round it to 10 because a lot of researchers are saying it, even for active people, it probably falls between 9 to 10 more. So if you put on 10 pounds of muscle, which is a lot, and let's just do, like I said, a little recap here. So your first year, lifting, like really lifting, not going in and doing lifting classes, but your first year going in and doing like a lifting hypertrophy program. So that is going to bring higher outcomes of muscle because we're not doing metabolic work, aerobic work. We're actually stimulating more for hypertrophy. So for a woman, her first year going in, training 4 or 5 times a week, she can put on 10 pounds of muscle. That's not necessarily unheard of. So that woman then, in that year of going from being like a sedentary individual, not working out, not lifting weights, she goes in. Well, and maybe she was doing all the cardio classes. And now she goes in, and that first year she switches. She can still keep her cardio. People always think I'm anti-cardio, which I think is so weird, because what health and fitness coach would be anti-cardio? I mean, it is a great form of exercise to bring out specific outcomes for cardiovascular health. Like, why wouldn't we want to work on and increase our aerobic system? Just because I don't do it very often doesn't mean that I'm anti it, but maybe this person really loves cardio. They love running. Great. Let's just include some muscle building in there, right? So let's say this person, whomever they are, they go in and that first year they put on 10 pounds. Awesome. Okay. So they can eat now an extra 100 calories. That's not nothing, but it's also not what I feel like is being promised to people. You want to eat so much more, like something I heard, like when your favorite influencer goes to Disney and eats all of the treats and it doesn't really affect them, it's because they put on muscle. They've put on 10 pounds of muscle. I mean, they could eat 1/8 of a treat at Disney and they've hit that 100 calories. Just to put this into perspective, guys, that 10 pounds of muscle, and don't worry, we are going to talk about how this is multifactorial. We're not going to just fixate on this muscle thing, but it is interesting. And I really want to drive it home. If you put on 10 pounds of muscle that first year, which is totally doable, and you can now eat an additional 100 calories, that is like a heaping cup of blueberries. That is an additional half a cup of oats. That is almost a half of a Snickers. I feel like the Snickers one really drives it home. So it's like, oh, okay. Well, then that doesn't make sense. She put on 10 pounds of muscle. She's going and eating all these treats at Disney, but she can really only, like, it's only giving her an extra 100. And those treats at Disney are like an extra 5, 6, 7, 8 thousand calories, not just 100. Okay. So this is why I think it's really important to drive this point home. Let's just say me and my husband, we figured out over the past 8 years how much muscle I've put on. And I wish he were here to correct me. I know it was around and a little over 20 pounds, but he had it really figured out. That it was easier to figure out before I was pregnant, obviously. And we were comparing different body fat percentages at different points in time, like when I first started to now, and my weight and everything. And it was really shocking. So I've been lifting weights, guys, for 7, 8 years. And I've put on, you know, 20, I think it was, I can't remember exactly, guys. I'm going to guess, and I'm probably going to guess wrong because I also have pregnancy brain. And I know some of you have been watching my Instagram stories, and I'll say things to my husband like I'm so scared. I have this feeling that something is wrong with the baby, that baby's not growing well. And I didn't have this feeling with the other kids. And he just like turns and looks at me, eyes wide open. He goes, wait, what? You have literally had the same exact fears with every single one. And they're usually expressed in the second trimester, like exactly where you are right now is when it really comes out strong. It was the funniest thing. So I really do have pregnancy brain. So I'm sorry. But I do know it was a little above 20 pounds. And that's 8 years of hard work. Now, keep in mind, everybody's rate and ability to put on muscle does come down to genetics. That can include some hormonal health. I've struggled with some hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's and some hormonal issues that I really do think affected the rate, because as soon as we got my T3 levels on point and even my progesterone and estrogen were looking a lot better, I noticed that I started seeing an increase in muscle. And this was, you know, 5 years, 6 years of lifting weights too. So there's a lot of factors that go into how fast or how slow somebody will put on weight, or excuse me, put on muscle. Well, and also body fat, but we're not talking about that right now. Anyways, I'm trying to bring this down because I can get lost in the weeds. You guys know that. So I'm trying to bring it back. Let's just make it really easy and say, I've put on about 20 pounds of muscle. And my body composition has completely changed. It's been really exciting, really, really cool. So that gave me, what, an extra 200 calories? Which actually does line up pretty well. I would say 250 is what I've noticed my maintenance was when I first started. After my first cut and I went up back up to maintenance, my maintenance was closer to 2,000. And my maintenance now, I can land anywhere between, you know, 2250 to 2300 and maintain really well. But we're going to talk about what influences that too, because I can hit 2300 and maintain really well. My activity level usually is a little bit higher though, because it's not just putting on muscle. It is, like I said, these other factors that come into play. So even if we just zone in though and say, okay, well, I've been doing this for 8 years. I've put on 20 some pounds of muscle. That gave me an additional 200 calories. Yeah, that is a lot. But once again, that's over a really long time period too. That wasn't after 6 months or after 12 months, right? So, and even then, let's take a step back and say, so what does that give me more a day? 200 calories. What is that? Well, now I'm just shy. I think a Snickers bar is 220 calories. So now I can almost finish a Snickers every day. That's the additional amount, right? So it's not this crazy high, excessive amount that some people think. Another thing too that's often told to us is, well, if you do kind of what I call a slow drip reverse, you know, adding 30, 10, 20 calories in a week after your diet to find maintenance, then some people have preached, well, you can just keep pushing up your maintenance higher and higher and higher and higher. And that's not necessarily true. Anybody who's done a reverse will tell you, you are going to, at one point or another, hit your cap. And anything above that, you start putting on body fat. So that's, you can't tell everybody, well, if you did a reverse, then you can eat way more than you could before, because that's not true. There's a lot of things that have changed. What if they lost, you know, 50 pounds? Well, then they're going to be eating a lot less, even if they did a reverse, than what their maintenance was before. But they will be eating more than they were when they were dieting. That's true. That's a fact. But the point of maintenance is to, and this is kind of how I explain it, because people will say, well, you can raise your maintenance a lot higher if you do this slow drip. And I'm like, no, you are eating more because you're reversing, because you're just increasing your calories. You're eating more to find your maintenance. So let's talk about all the different factors that go into this. Okay, let's actually discuss your daily energy expenditure. That is your daily energy expenditure, your TDEE. If we balance food coming in with your TDEE, your total daily energy expenditure, if we balance the energy coming in and the energy going out, then you hit maintenance, right? So what are the biggest contributors, or all of the contributors that go into that TDEE? The biggest contributor is on the bottom. It is your basal metabolic rate, your BMR, or some people refer to it as RMR. There's slight changes, resting metabolic rate. There are slight differences, but a lot of times in these conversations, we can use them interchangeably. It's fine. So your BMR is about 60%. Well, what's included in your BMR? Your BMR includes genetics, sex, age, body composition, like how much fat you have, how much muscle, because that also is an organ. It pulls in, and to maintain the amount of body fat you have, it requires energy too, right? So like I said, we have genetic, sex, age, body composition, like body fat, and muscle, and just keeping systems running in your body. Another thing that you can include in this is hormones. So this is why when people are having hormonal issues or going through perimenopause, and we are seeing some imbalances in hormones, or if somebody has been trying to live in a diet, we see a reduction in the conversion rates of T4 to T3. So we see reductions in metabolic rate in your BMR due to a lower active thyroid. So if you are trying to live all the time in a calorie deficit, your thyroid is going to be negatively impacted. This is why we encourage people all the time to spend more time in maintenance. You cannot live in a calorie deficit. You cannot get the body fat percentage that you want to, usually in one round of dieting. Usually you have to do a few. And when you go into a diet, there's just some natural adaptations that happen. And one of them is with the thyroid. And that can have a direct link to your metabolism. So we can see a lowering in that rate. And I love having this podcast, because then I can talk about the slight nuances that go into BMR. When I'm sharing, you know, a 90-second clip, and that's why even with this cute girl that people were sending over to me, I'm like, look, I know what it's like to have 90 seconds to try to deliver a message. It is freaking hard. It is so hard. So, you know, I wonder if we sat down and talked, if maybe that message would look very, very different. I don't know. Right? I mean, yeah, you just don't know. But that's actually why I try to stay away from certain topics on social media, because we can't go into this. So like I said, that BMR, that's about 60% of your total energy expenditure for the day. Now, what can we control with that BMR? You know, we can't control our age. We can't control our genetics. We can, to a degree, control hormones in that, like I said, if we're trying to constantly live in a calorie deficit 24/7, that is going to negatively impact that. So it is really important that we do increase and spend more time at maintenance to make sure thyroid, as well as other hormones like estradiol and testosterone and stuff, are still in a good place. Or at least, you know, after we go into a cut, we need to make sure we reverse back so that they can go back to that normal place. They are going to, like I said, we are going to see a reduction of them in a calorie deficit. This is totally and completely normal. It's just we don't want to chronically live there. So if you go down for a time, a good time, you know, like 12 weeks, 24 weeks, you know, depending on the person, the higher the body fat percentage, they can spend a little bit longer in a fat loss phase. And the lower their body fat percentage, they should be doing probably shorter duration of cuts. So 3 months may be ample for somebody who's already lower, like let's say below 25%. I'm just throwing that out there. There could be people who after 12 weeks are still feeling really good and, you know, they're just getting under 25 and they feel like they can push a little bit more. And that's fine in my opinion. So we can, to a degree, make sure that our hormones are doing well by not being crazy about constantly restricting ourselves and constantly doing massive amounts of just like cardio and HIIT and not eating enough, right? Because for, I feel like it was the generation before me, that's all they would do. Just don't eat and do as much cardio and HIIT as possible. And it's, we're seeing them go through menopause and perimenopause and being hit really hard. Those that came around quickly and realized, oh, I've got to put on muscle tissue as I go through this phase in my life, they are not experiencing as many symptoms, not to say that there aren't any, but as many. So they're going into it in a healthier, better place to handle the changes that are just naturally occurring for women. So beyond hormones, what else can we change? Well, we can change the body composition. We can increase muscle. But like what was shown, this isn't going to be the difference between, you know, a woman who can't enjoy her Disneyland treat and a woman who enjoys all of them, right? It's you put on 10 pounds of muscle, you can eat 100 more calories. But the first year, newbie gains, like I said, that's pretty likely. The second year, that gets cut in half and becomes a lot harder. And if a woman is constantly trying to stay in a diet and constantly trying to stay her skinniest, smallest self, then it's going to be cut down even further. And you'd be lucky that second year to put on any muscle if you're constantly under eating, right? So there's all of these factors that play into it. But we can increase that BMR just a little, but we're not talking about massive amounts. So yay, now we're up to like 61% or 62% over 60. That's not massive. But if you look at the other two areas, the next one up is about 30%, and that's physical activity. And that includes NEAT and exercise. So we're talking about non-exercise activity and exercise. It's just how much do you move? How are you sedentary? Are you sitting all day? Or are you up and looking for opportunities to move around and be active? This doesn't mean you have to do cardio all day long. Just staying active and moving around and finding ways. Maybe you don't sit at your desk. Maybe you get a standing desk. I loved having conversations with my clients and encouraging them to talk to their boss about getting standing desks or getting a walking pad under their desk so that they can just stay a little bit more active. It doesn't mean that you have to do 2 hours of cardio every day. But that NEAT is about 20% of that 30%. A lot of times people think, oh, exercise is the next. That's going to be 30%. It's not. It's your non-exercise activity. I mean, I'm a hands talker. I'm a fidgeter. I seldom sit still, even right now. I'm using my hands, my legs bouncing. I'm just a fidgeter. So naturally, my NEAT is actually pretty high. When I go into a calorie deficit, that's actually one of the first signs I know I'm in a calorie deficit, because I stop using my hands as much and I stop fidgeting as much. Even my husband told me my feet, like he was telling me that my feet shake in bed at night, like before I go to bed. He's like, your feet kind of bounce. I'm like, that's weird. That's annoying. I'm sorry. But I am. I'm just a fidgeter. So that's 30%. So now we're at 90%, right? We can't do much about BMR, the 60%. We can increase it a tiny tad bit. The 30% though, physical activity, we can increase that. We can control that. We can move around more. Park further away from the grocery store. When you take your kids to the park, instead of sitting there, walk around. Move, look for opportunities to stand versus sit. All of those things really, really do add up. The last 10% is actually thermic effect of food. A lot of people don't realize that when we eat, it actually requires energy to burn and process our food. Now, different types of food have different thermic effects. So, protein is going to have the highest thermic effect. So if you're looking around and you're like, why can that person eat way more than me? Like almost always on Instagram, when somebody messages me or when I see somebody and somebody else is saying, well, how come you can eat more than me? The person that they're talking to usually has minimum of 1 gram protein per ideal body weight. That's usually minimum of where they're sitting. They usually love high protein meals, which will increase that thermic effect. We can control this. Another thing too is we can actually, by choosing whole foods, we can increase the thermic effect of food even more, by up to 20%, by choosing more whole foods. The study that I'm quoting, I remember thinking it was really funny because I'm like, oh, what whole foods were they talking about? And when I read through the study, it was the difference between a sandwich on white bread versus a sandwich on wheat bread. And they saw 20% higher thermic rate with the wheat bread than they did the white bread. So even just swapping out and choosing more whole grains, whole foods, you can eat a little bit more as well. So does this make sense now? It's not just somebody put on a little bit of muscle, because that's not having huge, massive impacts. What we're usually seeing is somebody went from becoming a sedentary individual to changing their life, to focusing more on muscle. And just so you know, like I said, with the BMR, it's affected by hormones, genetics, sex, age, body composition, like muscle, all that. Muscle does impact hormones. So if we want to regulate hormones, if we want to have healthier hormones, we do want to increase muscle. So muscle has a lot of ties to thyroid hormones, to insulin. We've already talked about that. There's a lot of positive results with building muscle, not just, well, I can eat an extra half a Snickers today because I spent the past year working so hard to put on 10 pounds, right, of muscle. So it's way more than that. It is this person has changed their very nature to become a healthier person, to lift weights, to move their body a lot more. And they find joy in this. They have foods that they love that are high protein, that are 80 to 90% whole foods. They've made all of these different choices. And that is the compound effect. It's all of these different choices compounding over time does actually give them more calories they can eat in a day and stay at maintenance. And it can actually give them a little bit more wiggle room when they do go to Disneyland and they have food freedom. They're like, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to have fun with my family. If they want a churro, I'm going to grab a churro. If they want whatever else is, I don't know what people get at Disneyland, they can get it and not think twice about it. Because the next day, they go right back to this lifestyle that has over time changed them. And even if, heaven forbid, the scale does go up a few pounds after Disneyland, it's coming right back down because they're going right back to their lifestyle. So I do think it is really important that we talk about all of these different factors that compile together to produce what people are seeing. And then I'm just going to end with kind of how I started. It is really, really important that we not get caught up in what Sally or Susan are eating in a day. And a lot of times, I've said this to people many times before. How do you know that they eat more than you? Do you track 24/7? Are you really consistent? Or do you kind of track for a few days, burn out, you have all these BLTs, you go out on the weekends, eat whatever, have some alcohol once in a while? Like, are you really eating? Like, is that influencer really eating more than you? Or are you eating more than them even? Honestly, it might be that the influencer can eat more than you. Or I should say, it might be that it appears like the influencer can eat more than you because they are actually just better at budgeting their foods consistently. So I've shared budgeting, money and food. The budgeting for both of them is so comparable. Me and my husband were on this pretty strict budget. And I remember I had saved up because I really wanted, we were going on vacation and I really wanted to get new swimsuits and I really wanted to get new outfits and all these things. And we were on this really, really tight budget, literally to the penny budgeting things. And I went out and because we budgeted, I allotted this certain amount to go towards those clothes. And I was so excited. I honestly think I appreciated them more. I was even more excited to get them because of our budget. I think that it's kind of the same way with food. Like, you end up enjoying food more when you're not just eating chocolate all day long. You actually enjoy it more when you allot it wisely into your food budget. But anyway, so I went out and I bought this outfit and these swimsuits and all that. And I remember somebody close to me, when they saw what I bought, started making comments. Well, I wish I could just go out and do a shopping spree and not care. And I was just, I remember being like, they didn't really hold back. I think I even said it a little bit nicer than them, and they kind of went on and on about, but I'm over here struggling with this and this, and I can't do that, and da 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 da. And it's really interesting because this person also would go out and get lunch at a restaurant every day, and they had these routines that they enjoyed, and they didn't want to sacrifice them. But isn't it interesting, as I'm sitting there listening to her, and later when she left, I turned to my mom and I was like, it's so fascinating because I worked so hard the past 6 months actually budgeting for this. But people don't see that. They just see, oh, neighbors splurging again on another vehicle. Well, you may be going out every day and spending $20, $50 nickel and diming stuff. And they're not. So they can actually afford these larger items because they are budgeting to the penny. So I hope you can see where I'm going with this. Too often we are comparing our private lives to other people's public, when really we have no idea, and we're not comparing apples to apples. So it's really important that we hold those thoughts and judgment, but also, what good do they do? Can you learn something? Now that I like. Huh, it appears like she can eat more than me. I want to eat more. What can I learn from her? But sometimes it's not expressed that way. Sometimes it's expressed as this comparison and negativity, and I'm just going to sink into this pit of despair because they're just genetically blessed and I'm not. It's like, no, be cautious about that. So I like that idea, like, oh, I'm going to look at what she eats in a day to see. Oh, she's eating a lot of whole food. She's eating a lot of fiber. She's eating a lot of protein. How can I, within my nutritional needs, how can I fill my plate in a way with my nutritional needs that can pair up well? So how can I get more protein? How can I get more whole foods? How can I get more fiber? How can I not BLT my way through the day, you know, bites, licks, tastes, sips that go unaccounted for. But then you count your main meals and then you're wondering, huh, they seem like they can eat more. Well, actually, you're probably eating the same or maybe even more because of those BLTs, right? There's so many different factors that I want to talk about. And hopefully this has been a helpful episode. And then I'm just going to end with one quick reminder. Our maintenance, we just barely went over all of the contributing factors to one's total daily energy expenditure and our maintenance. So if our energy in and energy out, and let's say we are working on building muscle, we're working on increasing energy out, we're working on whole foods, protein, fiber, all of those things that I mentioned, that energy out, and the energy coming in, there is just going to be a point where we've hit maintenance. And no matter how we try to slow drip, add 10, 20, 30, 40 calories a week, we've hit our maintenance. And anything above that is going to push into increasing body fat. Or if you are training really, really well, potentially get a little bit of muscle with that body fat. That's what a build is, right? We go into a surplus. The idea that a slow drip reverse is going to, one, prevent any additional weight gain is not understanding reverses. Now, we want to maintain as much body composition, and that's the purpose of the reverse. But body comp is our muscle and body fat ratio. And we want to try to keep that the same while reversing. But that is actually different than weight, because our weight can fluctuate while our body composition of fat and muscle remain the same. So oftentimes people get confused by that. But there will get a point where, as you're reversing, you'll notice it's not the weight's going up, it's my body comp is changing. And you can't just keep adding calories to somehow change your maintenance to be greater. It doesn't work that way. I feel like some coaches are teaching if we slow drip, then we can raise our total daily energy expenditure independent of moving more, building more muscle. No, it's just eat more and we can slowly raise up so that your body can maintain the body composition. And that's not how it goes. And sometimes they'll even say, and then when you go into a cut, then you can eat more the second cut than you did the first cut and still see the same results. And once again, that's not true either. Anybody who's done multiple reverses and multiple cuts knows that that's not necessarily the same. Now, somebody may learn a little bit more in this journey about how we don't have to start a cut at 1200 calories. We could start it higher. And that's really good to learn. But that thought is independent from, well, I can start it higher now because I raised my maintenance. Unless you put on more muscle and you're moving more and you're more active and you're choosing more whole foods and protein, those are the things that raise your maintenance. Okay? Those are the things. So those are the things that we focus on, not this weird slow drip reverse thinking that we can somehow get it higher and higher and higher and higher, right? Somehow we can eat 3,000 calories instead of 2 because I reversed, so now I can eat more. No, that's a misunderstanding of energy balance and of energy systems in our body. Anyways, I really, really hope that this has been helpful. If you have any questions, I'm always open to receiving messages on Instagram at Lifting Lindsay. You can always join us on the Be Strong membership. Go to bestrong.liftinglindsay.com to sign up, where there are courses on this. You have lives with me every other week. We have daily discussions about stuff like this. And then we also have training programs and food and recipes that are all part of the membership. We would love to see you there. You guys have a wonderful week.